Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
This is Leslie Kane, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and I am joined today by a returning guest, UK-based researcher and host of his own YouTube show and author of the incredibly popular Truth Proof series. Welcome back to the podcast, Paul Sinclair. Paul, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you, Andy, and great to be back and having a natter with you again and your audience. Thank you.
No, that's all right. And listen, it's my audience that has been asking for you to come back. A lot of folks have been saying either get more UK folks back on, it's been a lot of US chat, or get Paul Sinclair back on by name. So I think there's a lot of folks who do like watching your channel as well, of the same name, Truth Proof, over on YouTube. Paul, it's been 18 months almost since you were back on the podcast previously. So for those who haven't had the pleasure of hearing you speak or seeing your work, do you want to give an introduction as to who you are and what you do?
Well, yeah, I mean, Paul Sinclair, as you've just said, based in East Yorkshire in the UK, writer, researcher, I think we're all that, you know, researchers at least, your audience included. We're all looking for them answers and a lot of that little bit of proof of what we've seen or experienced. And I think I said last time we spoke that I would not want to be labelled as a UFO researcher, cryptid researcher, or any of those boxes that people pigeonhole themselves into. So where were we? So yeah, I think it's multi-phenomena research because there's so many links and so many threads of the same that run through it all. And I can probably hear your hardened UFO researcher shouting, thinking, no, there isn't. But there is, you know, and some of them, I mean, some of the big UFO organisations, that they will take UFO reports, brilliant organisations, by the way, but they'll take a UFO report, and in with that report, there might be something about a cryptid-type sighting. But we'll disregard that because that doesn't fit in with the narrative of what we're about. Well, to me, that's a big... It's been disingenuous to the research. It's disingenuous to the witness. And I'm not saying it happens in all instances, but I think there is some kind of shift now in people's way of thinking. And I'm not inventing wheel here, Andy. I don't think any of us are. I think that what we're looking into today... And we're creating new names for some of these things as we advance and evolve. What we're looking into today is the same stuff that people were seeing probably hundreds of years ago. For the people that think that a lot of this is military tech, yeah, let's run with that. Some of it could be. But when you've got reports that go back decades and decades, and I know we're jumping about here, Andy, so I do apologise.
No,
but
do
when
it.
You've got when you've got reports that run back decades and decades, sometimes almost 100 years, and the same phenomena, should we say, is being reported, then we've got to either ask ourselves, were we that advanced 70 to 50 years ago that we'd produce this technology? Because, you know, I look at these lights over the sea that I'm trying to film and document, and on land, and you get people saying, well, it's military tech, you know, it's some kind of new... Well, it's the same military tech that were reported 70 years ago in lifeboat logs and Coast Guard logs. You know, and I must sound like a broken record, but it's the only way I can look at it. And everything that we're dealing with the exception of a few things, is anecdotal. And that's always going to be a pain. But do I just move the goalposts and say, well, that's the phenomena. It's one step ahead of us all the time. It's 10 steps ahead. Well, perhaps it is, because none of us seem to be able to get a handle on what it is that we're seeing, what it is we're experiencing. Talking about some of the things, the sameness that runs through the subject. Well, let's look at the alien abduction scenario. Couple in their privacy of their own room, beings of unknown origin enter and choose to abduct one or both of this couple, both the couple. And during the process, you get a witness who'll report being spoken to in their mind. And, you know, this what people would call this mind speak. And we jump to the spiritualism, the clairvoyance. It's not really my subject, if I'm being truthful, but nonetheless, there's a thread of the same, because you've got clairvoyants who claim to hear spirit in their mind. So either they're lying, and the alien abductee is lying, or we've got the same thread of exotic science running through it all, in my opinion. The Bigfoot scenario, the cryptid, the hunter lifts his gun up to take a shot at this thing that he can't understand what he's looking at, and a voice comes into his head. Don't ask me what it's saying, but it's basically advising him not to do it. So, you know, and then obviously we're going to have the Bigfoot researcher screaming at the screen now, maybe saying, well, no, because there's nothing exotic about these things. It's just a undetected primate that's slipped below the radar and we've all missed it. You could be right. I'm not here to argue with anybody, Andy. You know, everybody's entitled to opinion, and those are mine. And I'm thinking to myself, there's a thread of the same running through all of this strangeness that we're involved in. And the anecdotal evidence, I mean, that's... We're a skeptic's kind of dream scenario, aren't we, when you think about it? And I say we, and I don't know whether to include you in that, because I don't know where you are on this, but... There's a very big gap in the account that somebody shares and the actual proof of what they're saying. Mm-hmm. All of us, none of us really have that proof. You know, we get the congressional hearings, which I know that you've looked into a lot more than me. But for the most part, even though we have a paper trail, once it's gone on paper, it's almost as though, oh, that's bona fide. That's cast iron now, because somebody's left a report. But it's come from, for the most part, anecdotal evidence. I know there's camera footage of some of these objects.
Yeah.
But seriously, I've got some absolutely incredible footage, and people will have seen it. And I put like, say, 4 or 5 seconds of this footage onto YouTube and onto social media occasionally, because I realise how good it is. I'll be using it with Les, and I'll be using it with Chris Turner for forthcoming documentaries. And it's really interesting footage. What it is, though, I don't know. You know, is it secret military tech? Could be. Probably that's the reason, I don't know, people find what I'm talking about interesting, because I am not going to stamp a mark on it and say, I'll tell you what this is, because I'm in the same corner as everyone else. I'm in the same position as everyone else, and I'm searching for answers. I dig quite hard for those answers, but I'm still searching. I've still not got a handle on what it is that we're dealing with at all.
A few things to unpack there. And I like, Paul, before we hit record, you said to me we had no idea what we were going to talk about, because this was planned, what, 20 minutes ago? You texted me to say you were free, so we were probably looking at this being a different day or time, but jumped on. But a lot to discuss there. First off, you asked me where I sit on the anecdotal side of things, because someone comes out and says, I have seen this, or I have witnessed this, or David Grush, whistleblower, I have seen documents that say, so then that is very much down to the individual, isn't it, to decide, is that person's story credible to me? And then that's always going to be subjective to the person, isn't it? Because if someone approaches me in the street and says, I saw a UFO, now I'm going to be inclined, just given my position, what I do, my enjoyment of the subject, to go, all right, interesting, tell me about it. And Paul, actually, I've not shared this on the podcast yet, and you might appreciate this, and we're probably going to jump all over in this now, I can tell.
Yeah, sure, we are.
I coach my son's football team, and a new kid showed up the other week, and his grandfather had brought him along, and the grandfather got talking to me, asking kind of what I do and stuff, and I mentioned the podcast, and he was like, oh, UFOs, you know, and this guy's in his 60s. He went, I saw something years ago, a couple of decades ago, that was incredible, and I'll, like, do you want to hear about it? And I was like, yeah, of course, go for it. One of the best sightings I've actually heard of from someone, to be fair. So we were standing in the playing field, and he was giving me some examples of kind of distance and stuff. What he said was, he woke up one morning with his young daughter, took her downstairs to give the wife some sleep. She was in the kitchen having breakfast, and he said he looked out his window, one of those beautiful summer July mornings where it's like 6, 7 a.m., blue sky, sun shining, no clouds. And he said in the field, that would have been maybe a couple of hundred yards away, he could see like a silver glint, like an object. And I'm trying to remember this right. And it caught his eye because it shouldn't have been there. He knows the field. You know, when you look at the same image every day out your window, it could be a busy street, and if someone changes a sign in a shop or something, you notice it. But there was nothing there except this field. And he noticed this object. And he says, it rose up, and it was like a light, like a ball of light. So I'm thinking orb type thing, whatever. Yeah. And he said it got as close as the houses that were just next to us. So now you're talking, this is like 50 yards away from us. And he says, there's this light, which then turned into a triangle. And he says, it went from being like this metallic light, just this triangle, which then just right in front of him was like the size of a family car, like a big family car. He couldn't believe what he was seeing. And he said he'd done the typical, you know, movie thing of taking his glasses off, rubbing the glasses lenses, putting them back on. But even mentioned it was unmistakable, Andy. It was right in front of me. And then this thing just glided off over the fields and away. And that was it. And he was like, there was no mistaking what it was. It was a kind of metallic shiny light. It then turned into a triangle, stayed there, off it went. And for him, that was, he's got a background from decades before that in the military and stuff, and he said he had a few other little kind of anecdotes and whatnot, but that to him was just mind-blowing. So there is someone who I've just met, they've just dropped their kid off for training, we've got chatting, and he tells me this story. So another parent, though, who wasn't listening, comes along and listens to that, hypothetically, is probably not going to believe that story.
Agreed.
And I imagine you as well, you're inclined to believe it and give people the benefit of the doubt. Why would they lie?
You're inclined to believe it, I would agree. Somebody called me the other day, and they might be on the level, and I don't want to detract from that incredible account that you've just shared there, but they might be on the level, and I spoke to them, and I'm not going to go into detail about it, but they were crying and emotional on the phone. I asked them for a date, roughly when they'd seen this object. This is only about 2 days ago, and they couldn't remember. And then further into the phone call, they gave me an example of a UFO, an alleged UFO event with the wind turbines. Can you remember years ago? And a UFO was alleged to have hit a wind turbine. But regardless, but I thought to myself, I've asked for a date. I'll probably continue speaking to this person to see where it goes. But I thought, I've asked for a date, and you don't know a date, but suddenly we've produced this prominent UFO-related event. Because if anybody Googles that, UFO hitting wind turbine, you'll find the date. So that were a red flag to me, if you know what I mean. But we all do it. We can't believe everyone we're talking to. But there's a good chance this guy might be on the level. So I shall run with it, and as far as it goes. But there's that much of it, and like you've just said, everything's anecdotal. I find it interesting. I mean, I've got Freedom of Information requests and all sorts of things here, do you know, and which I apply for, and it's almost as though it makes the event real once you've found that, and mm-hmm. and it makes it more real for the listener. And in my mind, I don't know whether that's correct, you know, the guy in question there with that Maritime Coast Guard Agency Freedom of Information request, Dave Barker, you won't mind me using his name, Flamborough Head, I think it was 2019, sees, parks up on his, he lives near the lighthouse, parks up at home, sees orange sphere of light in the sky. Tell a lie, he goes in actually with his wife and then comes back out to pick his phone up. And as he's looking out towards sea, he sees it. And then he's watching it, he's mesmerised. And I like the fact that these people have lived there many years. And so that kind of tells you that if this was something normal, they wouldn't be reporting it and ringing the police and ringing the Coast Guard. And over the sequence of about 10 minutes, these lights produced in different configurations. And what we've got there in that report, because and I probably had so much detail that they couldn't fail to send it me. Because as you know, with Freedom of Information requests, you've got to be pretty accurate with your times and your dates. So I knew police log, because he'd ranked police first. I knew Coast Guard had rang him. So this one says there's no military exercises taking place, so we've ruled that out. There's no ships in distress. There's no sort of aircraft that are letting off distress flares. And we've got this report. It doesn't tell us what it is, but it tells us there's something anomalous. Now, if I hadn't have got that, all I'd have been doing was relaying a story, just like you've just done. But that aids it a little bit. But
yeah.
I just think that it's – I don't think it's any less I don't think the stories are any less if you feel that the person who is sharing them with you are being honest and sincere, and they have life-changing effects or profound effects on a lot of people. I bet that guy, when he were telling you, I bet he were back there in the moment.
Yeah.
Because you're witnessing something when it's a genuine that's off the scale of anything that you can kind of comprehend. And that is the profoundness of it. And that's what drives me, to be honest with you. That's what's at 61 year old. That's what still get a buzz when you get these reports and you listen to these things. A strange creature sighting recently near area Filingdales.
Mm-hmm.
Contacted Filingdales. You know, I've got a response from them, and all they're doing is they've passed it on to military police and what have you. They're not going to go into great detail, but this is just a couple. Or going to the Whitby, I think they said they were off to Whitby Goth weekend. And you come to a place called Devil's. Do you want me to just briefly touch on this?
Please, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, they're driving across the moors, and they come to a. I don't know if you've ever been to Filingdales, but it's all up and down, and it's bleak moorland. And you come down a big sweeping bend called the Devil's Elbow. There used to be a pub built there on just in the middle of nowhere years ago. It's now a ruin. And then as they're coming up, they're in a camper van, and this lady sat at side of her husband. And they're driving up the road, and they're not far from Filingdales. And she said this thing ran across the road in front of their vehicle. It's night time. She said, and it was just about on the headlights. They just caught it. She says, well, I couldn't see the top half. She says it were very tall, and it looked like sticks, like a person put together with branches. And I don't mean she could see wood, but that's the influence it gave as it went across the road. There's a road sign near it, and I've got a friend who lives at Filingthorpe who comes out with us looking on a night, which is very close. So he's been and done measurements, and we've done all that. And she said, my husband is a sceptic, a very, very sceptical man, not interested in anything that me and you were talking about, really. And she says, and I never said anything. She says, and then he just went, did you just bleep see that?
Yeah.
And she says, I weren't going to say, oh, yeah. She says, what do you think it was? He says, I have not got a clue what it was. She said, I've never seen anything like it. He said it had the backward-facing hawks-type legs or twigs or branches as it ran across the road. So she's given me this brilliant description. She's willing to come. They live a long way away. They want to drive back to the location to talk me through it and talk about it. Now, to me, that adds a lot more validity to the sighting if somebody's going to drive for 2.5-3 hours to a location, because what they've seen is has sort of gripped them so much. I mean, I don't know if I've got it in front of me to go into more detail, but I think that's fascinating. But it sounds ridiculous. what they're describing sounds ridiculous, but that's what they described. She says, don't do anything. When we get to our destination, I want you to draw it. She says, now I went onto the internet and I were looking for examples, as she put it, of aliens. Mm-hmm. And she found these mantid type things, like a praying mantis, but something, yep, on two legs, just a sketch. And she said, and he drew it, and he'd done this sketch of just this shape, because there were no head, couldn't see it, it were above it. And she said, show me that. She says, right, they compared them. It's not the same, as in not joint for joint and exactly the same, but the same kind of configuration, it were there. So I find that fascinating. And, you know, once again, we're near a military base. Why are people seeing or reporting seeing things near military bases, not just, functioning military bases, but disused military bases? I don't know what the attraction is there. I mean, and around these areas, I don't know whether you have any views on that at all, but it does seem to, is it the high energy output? For some reason, I couldn't see what some strange creature running across a road just before RAF Fylingdales would find interesting about an RAF base. I don't know. But we do know, due to the road sign, because they sent me Google Earth images as well, and they said we were here when we passed it, and there's a triangular road sign. That road sign's 7 foot tall, and they couldn't see its head, and it were taller. It's what they're describing in a lot of instances. Makes it perfect to be sneered at and laughed at. It truly does, doesn't it? You can't. There's no other way of saying it. It's same when people report cryptids, say the Bigfoot or something like that, or it seems to be a popular name now, the Dogman. I just think we're reinventing something that's been described throughout folklore, and as we've kind of evolved, we've just dressed it up with a different name, as we think that we've become more advanced. Well, I suppose we have in some ways, but we've probably gone backwards in others. But, you know, the things that they're describing, when we made Wolflands, I tried to make it as true as I could to the witness. I didn't want to change anything they were saying. And you realize that what they're saying when they say that this thing didn't walk, it glided. When they say that this thing's eyes lit up and they were self-illuminating. For Joe Public, the guy overhearing your conversation when that man was speaking to you, mm-hmm, he's not going to bend his head around that. It doesn't mean that man's not intelligent. It's just out of the range of what everyday people are really interested in, I think, unless you've seen it and experienced it yourself. That's, I don't know. You said we'd jump all over the place, and we have.
Yeah, and I think there's an element with some of these sightings, not all of them, that maybe you're witnessing or seeing or experiencing a snapshot of somewhere else.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, that object that ran across that road, you know, whatever it was there in a way, but not there. You know, is it a place in time or a place, you know, physically where something just intersects? People say that about Skinwalker Ranch, you know. Is there a different dimension, different reality where that same place is there? It's this earth, but it's not this earth. And it's something like that. And these things, either deliberately or through a technology or whatever it might be, bleed through for a period of time, maybe completely accidentally.
I would agree. So, which leads us to the question, is it one intelligence that's kind of presenting as many things, or is it many intelligences all using what I've termed the same exotic science? All taking, they might not see it as science. It's just a word that we're dressing it up as, but all using the same, or taking advantage of the same conditions, should we say, that I don't know, that something as, I don't know, I'm lacking in words to actually describe what we're trying to talk about. I mean, we need a new vocabulary for this subject anyway, or for many parts of it, because I don't think the words that we're using adequately, we will get there.
That's all right.
Describe it. You know, it's you know, I'm very close to North Sea, Andy, probably not even 500 yards away from North Sea. And I realise that a lot of what I'm observing and a lot of the reports that I'm taking from people are from fishermen, are from people observing the sea. So they're out over at sea. And you know, there's a lot of talk about extraterrestrials. And when we look up there and we see the vastness of it all, it would be silly to say, no, nothing could be visiting us, because I think the potential is there for probably many things to be visiting us. But what about the sea? What about the oceans? They say that there's 95% of the oceans that haven't been charted and looked at. Well, I've started another book. I've called it The Sub-Universe, The Submerged Universe, because I think the potential for another intelligence, should we say, to be operating and residing in the sub-universe is great. If there's so much of the oceans that haven't been charted and discovered yet, I don't know. You know, we've just got to throw all these hooks out there and hope that somebody else listening to what I've got to say might be able to just add a little bit more meat on the bone, and just it just opens another door for you, because I haven't got the answers.
I think it's like, when it comes to this planet, the way I try and think of it, and it makes sense to me, is that we live on the skin of an apple. And it's like not knowing what's underneath that skin and thinking that that's the apple. We own that apple. But inside it, there's seeds, you know, there's food, there's microbes, there's other little insects and stuff. And sorry for anyone eating fruit at this time. There could be a maggot inside there. There could be something that's, you know, you don't know what's inside that apple, but we just inhabit the skin of this. So like you say, there's whole other potential life forms, dare I say it, civilizations, past and present. That have kind of gone before it. And I don't know if you're aware of the work of John and Jerry Tedesco.
No.
I've just had them on the podcast, Paul, recently. I'll send you over the link. They are a couple of gents out in America. One of them has basically spent most of the retirement savings on kitting out like an RV, like a remote laboratory. And they have parked up on the east coast of the United States looking out at the sea. And they have basically been filming lights out over the ocean for months. They've got loads of data, loads of videos. They're tied in with a few different agencies who are interested in what they're seeing. They have got tens of thousands of dollars of really expensive equipment looking at this stuff, and they are filming it. Like you say, you're at the North Sea, you're seeing these lights, and these lights have been reported not for months or years, going back decades and centuries.
Absolute decades, yeah. It's great. And I'll tell you what would be good. I mean, these guys obviously sound, you know, they're really dedicated and they've invested a lot of time and money in it, which is brilliant. But it would be great to cross-reference this information. I don't mind sharing the information that I'm getting and the reports that I'm getting, because I'm out there trying to observe it. Unfortunately, a lot of the time, it's happening when you're not there. You can't be there 24/7.
It's reactive. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's on top of the clifftops at Thornwick Bay in Flamborough, there's a huge CCTV pole. There's nothing there. It just happens to be there's a guy who owns a cafe further down, about 400 yards away, a little cafe, and he's part of his job is CCTV, so he's put this great pole up. I've been badgering him now for the last 2 years. To set up some kind of stream which people can contribute to monetary-wise, so that he's not doing it for nothing, that they could look out to sea. I know that I could get him lots and lots of customers, and it wouldn't, you know, I don't mean paying loads of money, but just for a small fee to be able to just look at this brilliant area that I'm talking about. But, you know, it's great that other people are investing so much time. I mean, it's costing me, and it has cost me thousands and thousands of pounds over years, far more than what I've recouped. But you're not after proof that so that you can make a lot of money. You just have to proof and to substantiate what you're talking about and what you're sharing other people's accounts. I mean, jumping away from UFOs and cryptids, I was in an area called Dane's Dyke literally 2 days ago. And I don't know if you've looked at any of these shorts that I put on, but I'll go out like 4 in the morning in the winter as well. So I were up there at 4:20 2 days ago. I'd got my little dog with me and just milling around Dane's Dyke. I love it. It's just, there's nobody about. It's brilliant. But I get a phone call literally, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon from this guy, Dave. I'll not say his surname. He's going to give me more information today, hopefully. And I spoke to him about 10 p.m. last night as well. And there's a lady who works. There's only the golf club close to Dane's Dyke. So she works close to Dane's Dyke. And She's told Dave's daughter that three of them saw a big black cat. We know that's not unexplained phenomena. I think it's established now, Andy, that, you know, before when people used to roll their eyes and say, oh, these things aren't here, they're here. There's too many people seeing and experiencing them. But what I'm saying is, I'm not round there at 4:20 looking for a black cat, but I'm round there at such an hour wandering about it, quietly in thick woodland it's ancient. I mean, it's a Neolithic earthwork that runs for 2.5 miles that cuts Flamborough Head off from the mainland. So you've got 5 miles of land that's cut off via Danes Dyke. And so I'm there at that hour. I'm not seeing anything. I'll be up at Bempton tonight. There'll be a few of us up there. And I don't want to put a damper on it, but chances are nothing will happen because unexplained phenomena does not perform to order. So I've written the truth proof books, and I think people imagine that because there's lots of reports in them, we'd only got to go to Bempton or Speighton and we're going to see some of it. It's not the case. All I would say is that the potential to see something, I believe, is probably greater there than most other parts of the UK. But I could be wrong. It could be that in myself, they've got somebody who's doggedly determined and spends a lot of time there. It's hard, isn't it? You know, it's difficult. Are we creating the phenomena? You know, and I don't mean tulpas. Are we? Does the phenomena connect with us like this intermind connection? It seems to be all knowing, all aware. We talked about the mind speak at the start of this podcast. So if it's all aware and all knowing, how about what you're thinking right now? I hope it's not bad. I'm joking. What you're thinking right now and what I'm thinking, what if them thoughts are just going out there into the ether and they're actually audible to the phenomena? They're actually audible. They can, even if not audible, you see, we're dealing with everything we're dealing with. We're trying to fit it into what we understand as humans.
Yeah.
And but what if the thought I'm putting out now somehow can be picked up by this, what we call unexplained phenomena? It would answer a lot of questions as regards if the military decided they were going to set up in a certain area to monitor this and it never shows. If the people at Skinwalker Ranch set all their cameras up and it never shows. If it's, and I believe it is all knowing. I firmly believe that. And it's not just moving the goalposts, as the skeptic would say, or the debunker maybe, you're just moving goalposts and you're just saying that because you know there's no proof of what you're saying. I'm saying it because I firmly believe it, that it is aware, it's hyper-aware of everything that we're thinking and we're doing. Just like the guy who's observing something and takes his eyes off it and then it's gone. I just went to get my camera and it's gone. It's strange, isn't it? And if then, Andy, we just extend that and play with it a little bit more, if the phenomena can read our thoughts and in some instances project a voice into our mind, however it comes, what people would term as the mind speak, who's to say that it can't make us see images that aren't there, make us see things that aren't there? I could see it with naked eye. I lifted my camera up to take a picture and there's nothing there. I couldn't see it through the camera. What's that telling us? Do you know what I mean? It's multi-layered. There's so many. You talked about the skin and we're on the surface of it. There's so many skins to this onion that is unexplained phenomena, this paranormal soup of just strangeness. Plenty there.
Something else. Yeah, no, something else you said right back at the start about this being a, you know, multi-phenomena research. And you said people are maybe waking up more to the connections between UFOs, cryptids, you know, the paranormal, ghosts, spirits, whatever you want to, whatever kind of facet of this type of umbrella you want to talk about. Do you think that's because of social media and everyone being more connected, that they're seeing or they're exposed to more of these different types of things? Personally, you know, I don't disbelieve things like Bigfoot, all that kind of stuff, but it doesn't necessarily interest me. I'll give a little shout out to Calling All Beings, DJ and Co. over there on their channel. Have had some Bigfoot researchers on recently as well. And they will build that into the chat around UFOs and everything else. But for me, I tend to, not deliberately, but I just don't have the interest in it, but I don't disbelieve it. But like you say, more and more people are starting to connect dots between different aspects of this phenomena. And like you say, is that deliberate? Is that the phenomena itself starting to push that, or is it just us as a society starting to change how we think?
I don't think there's a right or a wrong answer. There's loads there, Andy. You know, part of it could be social media. You've got this cross-pollination, should we say, of information that's instant. So if I saw something spectacular and I talked about it today, I'm not saying everybody in the world's going to know, but there's a lot of people all over the world that all those connections, and it's there. So that's got to be part of it. And likewise, the researcher, not necessarily myself, but anybody who's talking about this within the same context, it's getting a lot more ears. It's getting, and if you can put it across, and I don't mean believable, but if you can put it across in such a way, you know, when I said like about the clairvoyant, and that hearing, they call it clairaudience, and I know we're going across old ground, but if you can put then you might get some people going, bloody hell, yeah, I'd never thought of that I can see that link now. You know, and what people perceive as ghosts. We just touched on the area called Dane's Dyke, Neolithic earthwork, 3,500 years old. Lots of stories attached to it, but one of the stories that goes back hundreds of years is a white lady. I'm just looking at my phone. I don't want it to ring again. Sorry. There's a ghost of a white lady. Now, those sightings and those reports are in folklore, and they've come through into, you know, books going back 50 years of the White Lady of Dane's Dyke. But I've managed to speak to people who claim to have seen it or her. But guess what they've seen? A sphere of white light. I've had nobody tell me that they've seen the floating apparition of a lady in white going through the dike. It's a sphere of white light. I think it's our perception. I'd love to have said that I created this term, but I didn't. And it's a pet hate of mine when I say something that other people use it and don't give it credit, like intelligent light forms, ILFs. It started in 2002 with my website, and I hear people talking about it and saying, I've come up with a term. No, you haven't. But I wish I'd have said this. We spoke to Paul Dore a few weeks ago, a bushcrafter, a really good, knowledgeable guy. And his theory and his take on it was that we, as human beings, put our own skin around what we're looking at, mm-hmm. and we shape it to our belief system. So if we're wanting this to be a ghost, then I've seen the white lady. If we want this to be, I don't know, a UFO, there's a UFO there, and I think there's a structured craft behind it. That's the skin that we wrap around it. I thought it were a great way that Paul put it. You know, on the cliff tops, we've got these various viewing platforms that the RSPB have kindly built, looking out to sea. And there's one called Grandstand. Obviously, it's got absolutely amazing views of Filey and all the areas. And the rock anglers, for decades, probably 40 to 50 years. I know because we have a witness called Mick Sigson who's fished the cliff tops for 50 years. And he claims he's seen the ghost of Big Railings. And he's not alone. There's lots of people claim that they've seen the ghost of Big Railings. Now, these are rock anglers. They wear a headlight, an elastic, you know, band and headlight on their head. And what are they seeing? They think they're seeing the ghost of a fisherman. But when you break it down, I'll say to Mick, Sigson it is, so we said to Siggy, well, what did you actually see, Mick? He goes, well, he said, we're there, it's dead of winter. We're going back 20 years, so there's no footfall, Andy. There's no footfall up on these cliff tops after dark. You very rarely you see people. And in the dead of winter, you see nobody. And 20 years ago, there'd have been even less. Yeah. So he said, we'll look at Grandstand. And I can see a white light, and it slowly comes down path, and then it stops. Then it like moves to edge of cliff. He says, and it puzzles us, and I leave my rod, and I go up and look, and there's nobody there. And that's the story that the fishermen are saying. But in their heads, they've shaped that. In the words of Paul Dore, they put the skin of the ghost of a fisherman around it, you know. And I think we shape the phenomena in some instances. It's hard to shape if you'd seen something akin to a Bigfoot or a dogman stroke werewolf, you couldn't shape that into a UFO, could you? But what I'm saying is, for the most part, when these things happen, we fit it into the box that we tend to, I don't know, follow or adhere to.
I think you were right on that when you mentioned that maybe the language that we have is outdated and old in the labels we use for things? How many times potentially could you replace the word ghost with projection? And then how many incidents then become something else? Like you say, as people who maybe have no interest in UFOs, you know, it's one of the last things they think about on a yearly basis, but maybe have something in the back of their mind through childhood about ghosts. So they see, like you say, a light, you know, looking at a window, looking down in a field. And for them, it's a ghost. For someone else, it's an orb. For someone else, it's a cryptid. For someone else, it's a dog. Whether that's their mind, whether it's been projected deliberately, they're seeing something, and whatever it is, it's just appearing to them in that way. I often wonder what I saw back in the 90s, the big Ferris wheel type object, given it was in an incredibly built up area where thousands of people would have seen it if they looked out their window. We saw it from a distance, but were we seeing it and no one else was? Just because we were meant to, or the time and place, I don't know. But maybe that's a good excuse for why there was no reportings of it. But then we didn't report it either. I don't want to go back over old ground, but
I wouldn't say excuse, Andy, because that sounds like it's diluting what you saw, which was sounds like it were incredible. What year were that? Just out of interest.
95, 96.
Would you say then, after that sighting, that put you on the path that you're on now?
Do you know what? I've always said I had an interest in that kind of stuff anyway, but it's more affirming for me that if and when, especially what I'm doing now, something comes out and you see a video and everyone in the UFO community goes wild about a certain video. Here's the proof we need. And it turns out it was a flare, a light, a misidentification, a drone. It doesn't make me go, this subject's all bullshit. I am no longer interested, because I remember what I saw. I remember it was incredible. I remember four other people with me who have, especially my mum, who's got no interest in UFOs. She still remembers it, not in the same way I do, but she remembers seeing something, but can't remember the detail. So for me, it's enough to go, well, there's still something out there. Just because someone's story turns out to not be true, or a piece of evidence turns out to be wrong or misidentified, or someone who is a big UFO champion in the community suddenly lets everyone down, that doesn't change my belief in the subject.
Do you know, I think I'm on exactly the same page as you with that, because if I film something and I put it out there and somebody comes up with an explanation as to what it could be and shows me something comparable, I'll hold my hands up. It does not make no big dint in my ego. It really doesn't, because I've not got all the answers. Essentially, I know what I saw in childhood, and that's what's driving me now. I would think, and I know other people who I put my faith in, as regards being quite sincere and how it's affected them when they've seen things, you know. And I've listened to other people's accounts, notable UFO abductees, and thought, well, they haven't changed the narrative over all these years, and there's certain individuals, and I don't mean the lying, by the way. It does surprise me. I'm just jumping away from it slightly. It does surprise me when they've had these profound experiences and they go to conferences and they'll talk year in, for decades sometimes, and it's the same story. I mean, I've got the attention span of a fly, so when I go to a conference, there's some incredible speakers. I don't listen to them because I just haven't got... I can't sit and listen to them. And they're probably brilliant, far better than anything I can talk about, but that's just me. But for me to go to a conference and repeat the same information, I couldn't... I'm not saying I couldn't do it, because I dare say I will in time, but I never have done so far. I've always give people fresh, new information, because it sort of annoys me to think that I might have people in audience who think, well, I listened to this last year, he shared this with me. But for the most part, decades ago, or 10, 15 years ago, you'd got the same speakers just repeating the same story, however incredible, over and over again. But my main point is, if they've experienced something so incredible and life-changing, why hasn't it put them on this path that I'm on? I suppose we're all different, and I don't know why. Why aren't they looking for things that are comparable to theirs? So you tell this account of your own and then interject and say, and the similarities to this one in 1970-something. Do you know what I mean? And I think it would just mix it up for audience. And I do realise your audience listening now, I do apologise because I'm jumping all over. But as Andy said, we'd not planned anything. There's no structure of questions here or anything, is there?
No. And just to affirm on that with the idea of not being upset when something's disproven to be a UFO. If people want to use the word debunk, whatever. But in this subject, we're looking for a needle in a haystack. Actually, we're looking for multiple needles in a big haystack, and people keep adding more and more hay. And whether that's some of these ridiculous videos folks are putting online that they're seeing on iPhone apps. I saw one yesterday on a page where someone is taking a photo of a quote-unquote UFO out of their window, but it's just the reflection of the camera light, and you can see it's a reflection in the window.
Sometimes you can see a group of four of them, and you think, I know what it is.
Yeah, 100%, that's it. Let's get the two and the two.
And I get them sent, everybody will, I suppose, and a lot of the digital cameras, the half-decent ones nowadays, I suppose, and the phones, because phones have got great cameras.
Yep.
You take a picture of a lovely sunset, and you'll get a blue or a green orb, you know, to the right or to the left of it, and they say, I've caught this. And you feel like you're almost insulting people, saying, no, you haven't, you've caught lens flare. So I just say, well, that's interesting, but, I do think it could be lens flare. Sometimes you upset people by just telling them truth, and if you'd ignore it because you think, I don't want to upset them, they say, I sent him that picture and he never did anything with it. Do you know what I mean?
Or even just your opinion to say, look, I think this is, you know, X, Y, or Z.
I'm never rude to people. Whenever anybody sends me anything, I always try to be polite. I think it's the only way to be. I expect it back. So, you know.
Couple of things I want to touch on though, Paul, before we get to some listener questions, which again, those jump all over, but this has been fun. Crop circle season in the UK, and I've seen a few wonderful pictures already. Is that something that you get time to investigate at all? Because I'm hoping to get some folks on to discuss that in the coming months.
It's interesting. I mean, if you're going to get a group of people, I wouldn't mind being part of it, because I've just got a few to share, not a great deal. One of our daughters, Jess, years ago, she were engaged to a guy whose dad had a farm, and I got to see a crop circle out at this farm in the middle of nowhere, just a circle in the crop. I think it was corn, just a circle, and drove out in a farm vehicle to look at it under the rules that I didn't share it with anybody. I'm sharing it now, but we're going back 15 years or more, so that doesn't matter anyway, I wouldn't have thought. But nobody got to see it, so that kind of told me that there was something genuine to that. Jumping to the other crop circle, when we talked about, I talk about Willsthorpe, I may have talked to you about Willsthorpe before, this we're called the Willsthorpe incident, and UFO seen over the sea by an elderly couple in September 15th, 2009, following day, just before we got to Crop Circle, the following day, the military arrived. Chinooks, two Chinooks, Lynx helicopters, marine craft. They requisitioned the yacht club, which, when I say the yacht club, it's a porter cabin, because the yacht club operate from there. The yacht club knew nothing about it. There was nothing booked or they weren't told that this were going to happen. How do I know that? How can I state that categorically? Because my son-in-law were at the yacht club when they came and moved them off. So I find that bit fascinating. We'll get to Crop Circle, but I find that bit fascinating. Put a freedom of information request in, because I'd got the specifics of the date, and I got a response back, which were interesting. I got the same response that Kaz Clark got for Penturk. It's literally word for word bit looks of it, because I've got it, and I looked at hers when she were reading it, and I says, I've got same response. But we know that they send a bog standard reply out to the UFO to the UFO questions. So where am I with crop circles? Right, around that time, there's a farm before you get to the area of Willsthorpe. Willsthorpe itself is just a small beach with 16 flats that overlook the sea, nothing for miles to the left or to the right. They were built in 1935 by the army. They were built by the military, and they're still there, the 16 in blocks of four. So that's that. In between the road and Willsthorpe, the main road, is a farm. I went and spoke to this farmer to see if he'd seen anything or heard anything unusual. And he talked about in the months prior to that, he'd found a crop circle on his farm, which would be between in between Willsthorpe and the farm. But what I found fascinating, and it's something that I've mentioned, and I'm hoping crop circle researchers might pick up on. He said, I've got an old combined harvester, he said, with no air conditioning. He says, and I had a, he'd got his dog with him, a liver-coloured spaniel dog. He said, and he was in the footwell of the combine. Well, you know that you're high up in a combine. And this crop circle is about 40 to 50 foot across. He says, and when the head of the combine hit the crop circle, so because he's got to make a few passes, when the head hit that, the dog suddenly sat bolt upright in the combine and began to howl. He says, and it howled all the way through. And when we passed, it got back down and laid down. He says, and it took us however many passes to do the crop. He says, and every time it did it. So I'm saying, because they're probably, I don't know, at least 8 foot high in this combined, is there some kind of difference in the air? I don't know. Is it just that the dog can perceive something no matter where it had gone on this crop circle? But I wonder if crop circle researchers have ever took poles and, I don't know, and put EMF meters or Geiger counters 10 foot in air and walked through them. I just think that's kind of thing. I'm not a crop circle researcher, but that's kind of thing. If somebody said to me, we've found one, would you like to come and have a look at it? I'd probably do some crazy things like that. I'd look nuts, wouldn't I? Let's face it. But, you know, I look nuts half at time anyway to most people. So you just do what we do, don't we?
Have you formed an opinion or kind of rough hypothesis on the reason for crop circles, what they are?
No, I don't know. I can't. I'm probably not going to agree with a lot of people who want to look at the alien hypothesis, but I can't see what the purpose of alien visitation would be, forming crop circles and leaving ornate messages for mankind in some instances in these crop circles. But let's just jump back. If I've got time for this,
yeah.
I think we might be 1963. If it's not, it's 67, because I've no dates in front of me. And a series of craters appeared all over the UK. The Dufton Fell, Bempton, Flamborough, Lanarkshire, literally all over the UK. And because of the lack of internet, because of the lack of cross-pollination of knowledge, most of them never got found out until the researchers of the day. It slowly trickled through, and then they did numbers on it. You know, Flying Saucer Review did reports on it and everything. The Flamborough Crater, and it'll make sense in a minute, the crop circles. The Flamborough mm-hmm. Crater appeared when this man, this farmer, who I literally spoke to because the papers back in the day gave names, addresses and everything out. So I were able to trace him. I couldn't believe he still lived at the same address. But the Flamborough Crater, he went to cut hay on his father's farm in the morning, and when he walked back, it had formed. No rain, no lightning, nothing. But the MOD came a short time after with Geiger counters and all sorts of apparatus, and they explained it away as a lightning pocket that had been hit by a gas pocket that had been hit by lightning on the cliff tops. He never knew that explanation, but that's when we dug into it, that's what it was that was explained. Likewise, the ones all in different parts of the country, they pulled Patrick Moore in, the astronomer, and his role was to dispel the myth of little green men. Why? Why pull? Would have been probably the most popular, most eminent astronomer of the day, mm-hmm. wouldn't it, back then, for people who don't know who I'm talking about. But his role, and it clearly states, was to dispel the myth of little green men. But what I find fascinating, and the report is out there somewhere, I know I've printed it off, is that Patrick Moore looked at one of these craters that appeared, and I think it were on this Blanchard's farm, and I can't remember exact location. And in each occasion, they scooped out the earth and crop and earth around, you know, around them. But it also observed in a barley field elliptical depressions in the crop where the stems were twisted and bent over, and he couldn't understand it. But he'd done a great report on it. So the guy who'd come to dispel the myth of little green men were actually sort of aiding the crop circle, in the people interested in crop circles, probably inadvertently, because he was just puzzled how these big circular depressions could have appeared close to where this crater had occurred. So does that mean that... I think we've got to say that there's a connection to the crater and the depressions. I think we've got to do, you know, but a bit of rambling there, people, weren't there? But I hope we got there.
No, absolutely. I want to ask you, we've just had the election here in the UK. A lot of the chat in the US right now is all about the presidential election. You can't get away from that if you turn your TV, your phone or whatever on. But in the UK, we've had a change of government. Do you foresee any way, shape or form that change of government is going to impact any appetite for disclosure or official interest in the UFO subject or related phenomena?
We'd like to think so, wouldn't you? But I don't really. No, I don't think anything will change. I just think we've got, probably a similar government, just with different coloured ties on, to be honest with you, you know? I'm not really the person to talk to about politics, if I'm being told. I'll end up saying something wrong.
No, not at all. And listen, I'm not very political. I think they all do the same stuff largely. And that's is what it is. And I don't think, in terms of the UFO topic, that whoever is the face of things is making those decisions anyway. And it's folks in the background who aren't elected into positions.
Yeah, I would agree.
For short periods who are in charge of it.
I'll tell you what I have noticed, and probably in the last few days, because we know that there's a lot of news outlets that probably tell the news a lot more accurate than what we're seeing on mainstream.
Yeah.
And there's news outlets that out there that are just sort of fear-mongering and conspiracy. So, you know, but I suppose we have to look at the ones that we adhere to. But I've noticed on mainstream, because I don't watch tons of telly, but they do seem to be talking about the potential for World War III a lot more. And I don't know whether you've noticed that. It just seems to be creeping in last, I don't know, short space of time. I mean, I don't want to put a downer on this podcast because it's terrifying. But I've noticed that's coming in, and I'm thinking, what are we being prepared for? Or are we being prepared for, we can't spend this on what we promised because we're going to have to spend trillions more now on rearming the UK, which money that we'll never see, whether it's been spent on rearming or not. It's just the black hole that can't be filled. Or, you know, it's one of them we don't know, but it's just my cynical mind thinking.
Paul, I think even the mainstream media now are guilty of looking for clicks, impressions and engagement as much as anyone else, and whatever buzzwords can get trending, especially the way the kind of climate for war and conflict's been the last couple of years. You know, it's incredible that after COVID you would have thought the world would have came out and all been nicey to each other, and here we are all at each other's throats again. But hey ho.
You'd have thought after COVID, I know we're a UFO stroke unexplained phenomena discussion here, but you'd have thought after COVID a lot of the world, regardless of whether you believe in what we're talking about, would have woke up and thought, we're being lied to on a monumental scale. But anyway.
Yeah, I think social media, just people make up their own minds with a lot of stuff these days, and in good ways and bad ways. And I enjoy a lot of social media, but it's definitely healthy to step away from it now and again. What I'll say, though, is we've got a lot of questions for you on social media and via email, so we'll get to those and we'll jump about. Peter loves sending in a question, and very much appreciate Peter's questions for all the guests coming up. He asks, so since you were last on, Paul, with Andy, and you spoke of your own personal experiences, have there been any more you've experienced personally?
No. There may have been subtle things happen, you know, that we can't pick up on, but nothing on the scale of when I wrote Night People from childhood, as I said, to childhood to present day. So I suppose it's a valid, very valid question, Peter, but nothing that's significant, if I'm being truthful. No, I know it's a short answer, but there you go.
No, it's a fair answer. I'd rather you were honest. And you know, a little bit earlier, you know, when you mentioned people talking at conferences and not having, sometimes nothing happens and you've got people who will go and just make stuff up. And the next question that's relevant as well, that if you go along to a quote unquote CE5 event And every single time they can guarantee you're going to see something. Like you say, you can go and research an area of woods or a coastline for 3 months and see almost nothing. But that's honest work. That's not, do you know what, every single night, if you pay me £500 or $500, I'll bring you along and I guarantee you're going to see something non-human. That's just not how this works. You know,
not how it happens. You're right.
I've not seen anything at all that I would explain as being interesting in the sky for quite a while. I mean, over a year probably, whereas I would see the odd thing now and again. Could be satellites or whatnot, relatively regularly over a few years. But I'm not coming on here and going, saw another UFO last week. You could, and sensationalise it, but it's just not true. And I think there's more of an honesty to that, and people appreciate folks just being able to say, no, I haven't.
Well, I think that's how we've got to be. You know, I'll be up there tonight, and the whole purpose of being up there is to see if we could see and experience something, because a lot of time it's not just the seeing, it's the experiencing. There's this fear factor that people are talking about, and there's this lower silence that people experience. It's a term that I've used, I suppose, what the people call it, the Oz factor, don't they? But it's just a difference in silence. But what I'm saying is that all of these things happen, but everything seems to catch you on the back foot. Is it because, Andy, that I'm going up there and I'm thoroughly throwing them thoughts out there? I'm armed with pulsar thermal cameras. I'm armed with good 4K cameras. We're not going to show this guy anything. Because, you know, it works on our terms, not theirs, as in us. And is that the reason? I'm not saying it is. I don't know. But then you get groups going, I'll not necessarily say to the cliff tops, because I don't want to slate anybody. There's some great groups out there, but they'll go to a location and suddenly they've, over 3 or 4 days, they've got 4 or 5 incredible things that they've seen and experienced. And I sometimes think, and I'll go, well, Christ, I don't know what we're doing wrong, because it's we're in the same location and it's not happening for us. Do you know what I mean? Maybe it's just all their enthusiasm, or maybe people's interpretation of a true UFO is different to what I would be looking for. Like you've just said, you can watch the space station fly over.
Yep.
And your people get excited, and you know, and not even bother checking whether it was the space station. And over, and then if you let that slide for 2 or 3 weeks, this orb were huge and it went over, and with no date to correlate or anything, and it's just the space station. Do you know what I mean?
And it stopped and changed direction. Yeah. But the video we've got, it just moves in one direction, but we didn't take that piece of video, and it's okay.
I'll tell you what, I'll try and put my money where my mouth is here. I'm not going to send all the footage, because, as I said, we want to use it for some documentaries, but I want to send you a bit of footage, and hopefully you might be able to just add it in.
Yeah, I can do that, yeah.
It's not the smoking gun of ufology, but it's interesting. It's like Chris Turner said. You know, I know you know Chris, and you know, he's a good friend of mine, and he's seen these bits of footage that I've managed to obtain over years up there, and he said every one of those bits of footage would form a sensational episode on a TV program about this subject. So, you know where we're going with that. And it really would. These aren't little dinks of light in the sky. You know, we try all sorts, good quality cameras, you know, and we try all sorts to try and capture the phenomena. But I've got some interesting footage, and I'll send you a few clips of it. But as I say, it's not the smoking gun of ufology.
Yeah.
But see who can explain what it is. It is a bit different.
Well, if you can get me that, I'll add it into the YouTube version.
I don't know when you're thinking of going with this, but I'll sort it.
Pretty quick. So if you can get those over. If you're on the audio version, I'll link it to the video so you can check out the clip of those as well. So cheers for that, Paul. Similar question from Peter that we've just kind of talked about. Have you ever tried to initiate contact with any entities or phenomenon you're observing? For example, using CE5, meditation, prayer, or something like mediumship?
We had a group that came up, CE5 group, a few weeks ago. They were really sort of, I don't know, really, really professional and genuine in what they were attempting to do, but they got no results. I've got no knowledge of CE5 protocol. I do know that I've been up there, and I've tried all sorts, to be honest with you. We've tried Gregorian chants and playing that. It, can you imagine that in, on clifftops in December in 12 at night? It's a weird, it's not produced anything. We've tried singing bowls. We've tried sitting quietly. We've put EMF meters 50 feet away on poles and watched them light up for some reason when we're asking questions. That's a strange one. They can sit there in silence for hours and hours and hours, and then you can say, I'm going to turn that off now in a minute, and suddenly you can see it just burst into life on and you know what I mean? You can't blame anybody's phone. You can't say it's electricity poles or anything. There's nothing there. So we've tried everything, but I think if we jump back to the fact and play with the idea that what if our thoughts right now are just going out there and they're audible. That's why I'm saying we need new words, because I don't think audible is the correct word. This unknown other, this higher intelligence, whatever it is, can hear them, can knows our motives. Then perhaps inadvertently we are practicing CE5. CE5 is just a new word for meditation and just sort of trying to connect with the unknown other, these beings of unknown origin, if they are beings. It could be just intelligent light. We don't know what it is.
Paul, I've got a really crude way of thinking about some of this, and it's just a potential, just a theory, but imagine it's a bit like Uber. If you go for a taxi on your Uber app, right, you don't get a taxi turns up at your door immediately. Sometimes you have to wait, and sometimes you have to wait longer than you would like to. Other times you have to find a different way of getting a taxi because there's no Uber available. What if CE5, in a way, works similarly, that there's nothing available at that moment? Not because they're necessarily busy. Maybe they are elsewhere at a different CE5 group, you know, somewhere in New South Wales, Australia, they're doing something similar. They don't get a notification to say, oh, well, Paul Sinclair and friends are waiting on us, so we'll finish up here in 5 minutes and head over there. But there may be something that there's an availability, or it's the right time and place for that to happen. And there's certain things that have to line up for these things to appear. And it's not just because someone again, like a Stephen Greer, would claim that if it's done the right way, you can just summon UFO craft. Okay, so if the entire planet all at the exact same time practice CE5, are you telling me that above every single person, a UFO is going to appear, or a ball of light?
UFOs, it's not going to happen, is it? You know?
No.
It's not. In my opinion, it wouldn't happen. But I do think it's about intent. You know, if you just simplify it and look at the Ouija board. We don't use one, by the way. I've not used one, but it's a group of people putting their intent into what essentially is nothing more than a board with letters on it.
Yeah.
I don't think the board is anything special. I think it's the actual focusing of the mind that's the channel.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's almost a placebo. It's that we're using this board. I bet if somebody invented something now and said that it can produce these results and similar to a Ouija board, some named something new and created this tool, that because it's a tool to connect with the unknown other, people would use it and suddenly find that, oh, this works. Have you ever used one of these? It's the mind.
Paul, yeah. It's that, you know, the trope in a movie where someone has a special power or gift, but they need a weapon or a symbol to activate it, and then late in the movie gets destroyed, but then they find out actually the power was within them and they don't need that anymore. And I think it would be a similar thing, like you say,
you just nailed it. That honestly, I think you're right. I think you're right. I think the potential for us to connect with the unknown other lies inside here, hence the people who claim to have used hallucinogenics and ayahuasca and other substances and add communication or contact with beings of unknown origin. I find that fascinating. Is it something I'd use? I don't know. I've not done, but I do like the repetitiveness of the accounts that come back. Okay, Andy, hit us with another one.
Yeah, Peter had one more question for you before we give someone else a chance. He mentions experiencers and abductees report the phenomena follows their family line. Has this been the case for you and your family?
No, I haven't. I don't think it has. I really don't. I mean, I didn't. There were one instance in 1970 when my parents saw what I'd seen in my bedroom. It's too long a story to do now, but it's in Night People. But they were one thing, and I tried to be as honest as I could in Night People, and I'd be being really cruel and a terrible person if I spoke about my dad shortly before he passed away, just for the sake of a book. And let's face it, it's not a bestseller, is it? Do you know what I mean? It's never going to make me thousands of pounds. But my dad, he had a chronic lung disease called bronchial ecstasis, mm-hmm. Which meant he had oxygen all the time. And the latter part of his life, he spent most of it in hospital. So I went this particular day, and bearing in mind, you could only take the oxygen mask off to say a few words and then put it back on. And when I went, every day I used to go from work because it weren't far from where I was working. And my mum says to me, he wants to speak to you. He wants to tell you something. I said, what? She says, I don't know. He just wants to speak to you. So I went into this little private ward in a standard hospital, by the way. We didn't have, you know, private treatment. I wish we had. But anyway, I said, my mum says you want to speak to me, do you? And he takes oxygen mask and he said, aliens. And he's telling me, aliens, his word, they came to visit me last night. Now, he didn't say it in that, it took ages, literally couldn't say more than a few words. I says, really? He says, yeah. Now, was it the medication he were on? He's obviously depleted of oxygen, or he wouldn't need the oxygen. Yeah. So is that affecting things? You're always going to get people suggesting that, and I'm not going to downtread that because it could have been. And he said that they spoke to him, and he said they wanted me to go with them. He says, and it was like a spiraling tunnel that opened up in the room. He says, and I didn't want to go. But I always thought of that, and I thought, well, I wonder if there were more, because I want to get back to your question. I wonder if there were more that he never told me. Do you know, because it weren't a great childhood, mine, to be honest with you. It was stark. Latter years I got on okay with him, but he was a very cruel man. You know, I've got four girls. You could ask my girls how many times the dad smacked them, and they'll probably tell you they can't remember because I didn't. Mm. But he were a guy who used to just use his hands. That were all he knew. That were all he did. He'd been to Borstal. He'd had a rough upbringing himself, and that were kind of life that he knew. And I wonder, because he were very deep, didn't share much, I wonder if anything did happen. I don't know. So jumping to Peter's question, and once again with Paul, it's a long-winded one, isn't it? But jumping to Peter's question, I don't know. There may have been more. I don't know. I really don't know. I'm looking at your books there. I can't see mine there, Andy.
you're on my Kindle. I've got the downloaded versions. There's a whole load, because you gave me some books at the event as well, didn't you? I've got a load in a box back here as well.
They're good in a box. Yeah, I'm only joking. No, fire.
And question from Nikki then. So Peter, you've had your fill. Thank you, Nikki. Nikki asks, I'd love to know what Paul's thoughts are as to whether non-human intelligence is extraterrestrial, interdimensional, and your interpretation of that sort of term, interdimensional.
She wants to know my interpretation of it.
Yeah, and if you think non-human intelligence, whatever it might be, is ET, interdimensional, whatever.
I don't know, Nikki. I don't know what it is we're dealing with. I really don't. I think there's the potential for all of what you've just suggested to be here. All or none, or are we dealing with one intelligence? Once again, I'm not trying to sidestep it, but are we dealing with one intelligence that's presenting us whatever we want, in the words of Paul Doerr, whatever skin we wrap around it? Yep. So if I'm following the alien hypothesis, and I want these things to be from the extraterrestrials from some distant planet, then that's what they're going to be. And if I want them to be from inner Earth, then that's what they're going to be. I don't know whether we shape what we're looking at. All I will say is that there's the definite reality. Whatever it is that's interacting with us, in my opinion, you know, hand on heart, I believe it to be real. I'm not imagining it. I don't think you guys are. It's just that, you know, there's a lot of infighting, isn't there? And a lot of arguing about what it is, because for the most part, a lot of people say, I'll tell you what it is. And as soon as somebody tells me what it is, I switch off. I don't want to know that answer. Because you don't know. If you did know, you wouldn't be sat listening to me right now, because you'd just be listening to this guy with all the answers, or this lady with all the answers. There's tons of them out there. That's one of sort of problems within the subject, probably within all subjects, the experts, and or so-called experts.
I like to think. Do you know what, Paul? That's what I like to think anyone who listens or watches this takes away, that I don't sit here and tell them what they should think and that this is the right answer. Whether it's stuff I agree with or not, it's very much down to them, you know, based on what I'm asking and what the guests say to make up their own mind. And they can disagree with 95% of what a guest says, but there might be something in that they go, actually, that makes sense on this, and it'll kind of shape and make their opinion fluid and malleable, and they can kind of change and evolve their opinion based on what different people say. But they should never just based on one person go, yep, that's all correct because they said it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, same camp there. I would totally agree. We do the live stream, and some of the guests we've had on, I think some of, for the most part, they're all great. But some of them, I'm listening and I'm thinking, I can't go with this. And although I'm not rude to them, you know, you try and challenge a little bit of what they're saying, because I think it's only fair to do that, as providing you're not being outright rude. But you can't agree with what everybody says, can you? You know, that's the way of the world.
I've had a couple of those, yep. And I'm very fortunate. Obviously, I pick and choose who comes on the podcast, and often it's based on recommendations and whatnot, and I'll have a little look. But there's some people that don't make or pass my own internal vetting process for various reasons. Other folks come on, and it's rare. I'm very lucky. You're probably looking, I could count on one hand how many guests I would look back and say, if I could have never interviewed them, I'd have probably left it.
Yeah, and obviously I know that you're kind of guy that wouldn't name names, but that's happened, has it?
Oh yeah.
Because I can tell you now, it's happened for me, and I would never. Yeah, we've done it, and I've just thought, no, God, what did I just do? You know, yeah. But there you go.
100%. Question, someone who I think you've met at a few conferences as well, Paul, Dave Smethurst, got in touch with the podcast. Right. Dave's a long-time listener, does a lot of great work and research himself. He asks a couple of questions. First off, what similarities does Paul see between the phenomenon observed at Skinwalker Ranch and the phenomenon he observes locally in Yorkshire?
Lots of similarities, Dave, and good to hear from you. There simply is, because once again, right at the start of the podcast, we talked about the multi-phenomena aspect of this, and that's what you're seeing at Skinwalker, and that's part of its popularity. And we ain't got a TV series, so I'm not trying to be jump on board there, but that's part of the popularity, because it covers everything. And they're not doing that deliberately. You've got the animal mutilation scenario, you've got the strange creatures that are seen, you've got the UFOs, you've got suggestion that things are opening up where you can view into some kind of other existence, portals, for want of another word. And all of those things are happening up and around Bempton and Speighton, and I've done for decades. So it's not just I'm not inventing the wheel here. These reports are there. It's not. I don't speak about things usually without having a name that I can put it to, or a location, or a date, or a witness. If a witness says to me, can you change my name, I will do that, providing I stick to narrative. I'm happy to do it, but there's everything presenting there, and that's the hook with these locations. When you're talking about areas of high strangeness, I know that probably Hestalen is an exception, because we've got the light form phenomena there, which presents, and I don't hear much about other types of unexplained phenomena. But for the bulk of these areas that people call areas of high strangeness, you'll find that it's multi-phenomena events that are taking place. The Hoya Baku Forest, is in Romania. There's lots and lots of different phenomena seem to be presenting there, allegedly. Skinwalker, Mount Wilson Ranch, like I said, Bempton and Speighton, Cannock Chase. There's a varied amount of phenomena that seems to present. What other aspects to question were there?
Just those links between Skinwalker and Yorkshire. Yeah, I've got a separate question. Links.
Yeah, there's definite links. And Trey Hudson. Trey was, if you've not interviewed Trey, I mean, I would recommend Trey Hudson. And he's researching at a place which they call the Meadow Project, because he doesn't want to disclose the area. But I know he's working with other researchers in America. And Trey's work not everything, but a lot of what Trey's talking about, a lot of what they're seeing and experiencing, the little time jumps, the little glitches in time, all that kind of thing, we're experiencing. The area of Skinwalker's experiencing. Repetitive dates are interesting. You know, February, we had a series of events in February 19, February 20, all in the same area. So you've got these areas of high strangeness, but within the area of high strangeness, you've got rich pockets of strangeness, let's simplify it, where things seem to be more concentrated and happening. It's fascinating. I don't know where it starts and where it ends. I really don't know.
And you're always very honest, Paul, that you are largely UK-based in what you research, because you're speaking to the people, you're going to the locations. Yeah. So if folks are wondering, why is he not asking Paul about all the US stuff? It's something that you've got less of an interest and less time with, given how much you spend. But
well, yeah, and I think part of the reason people will say to me, like I see your books there, have you read so-and-so, or have you read this or that, and I don't really read anything, and it's not the case that I think that these books aren't worth reading. Same with the speakers at conferences. I'm that entrenched in all of this, and all these are separate. They put little paper clips on them. I'm that entrenched in what I'm doing. I don't have time. So if you said to me, I won't be horrified. That's a stupid thing to say, but I'd be thinking to myself, oh, am I going to answer this? If you said to me, go into some detail about the congressional hearings, Paul, tell us what you think. I'd be thinking, oh dear, how do I do this? Because I've not really listened to a lot of it, because I've got too much of my own stuff to do. So I don't involve. But let me just say that it is the net is getting wider. I am getting reports from overseas. I've got some from Norway and Finland, dogman, wolfman related reports that are really fascinating, that are they're too good to just pass off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's other people involved. I mean, I've got professors involved who are helping me and talking to me and advising in some ways, and people entrenched in folklore who work on a really high academic level that are looking at things for me and helping me with information that I couldn't find and deciphering things. So I get a lot of help. When I say it's only me, I need to draw back a little bit. I get a lot of help, but it's me that's writing it up most of the time.
Yeah. No, Paul, and listen, I've got a lot of listeners and viewers, even in the States, who'll get in touch and say they don't follow the political side of things. A lot of the statements coming out, the congressional hearings, don't interest them because they have had their own experiences. They don't need the government to give them. There's a distrust of government. It's something they'll come back to when there's something they see as being more substantial, and they prefer boots on the ground research. They prefer hearing about experiences. So it's not just multi-phenomena research, it's kind of multifaceted phenomena research, because even within those pockets there are so many different groups. And compartmentalization is a big word used when it comes to talking about the US government, for example. But it's the same for the UFO topic, because there are so many people get what they need from the topic in different ways. And I'll get to the question, Paul, because he asked, has Paul heard of Slide 9? Basically, this was a slide in a talk that happened in the US, Paul. It talks about non-human intelligences possessing advanced technology that would allow psi manipulation and manipulation of matter. Do you think that something wielding this kind of tech would be responsible for all the diverse phenomena you've reported on? And do they have bases underground and sea in the area you research?
Christ, what a great question, and one that deserves somebody better than me to answer it, I'll be honest with you, because I've not heard of Slide 9. Do I believe that there's probably a base underground? Yeah, I do, yeah. I spoke to Linda Moulton Howe recently, and because I've got some images to share with Linda with some that we've been doing. And I was talking about the potential for the sub-universe, the intelligence is potentially living under the sea. And she took it one step further and she says, well, what about below the earth, inside the earth? And then you've touched on it. We're just on the skin of this apple, to simplify it, which is bang on. It's right. So there's the potential there. So Slide 9, though, I can't offer an opinion. I do apologize.
That's all right. Again, I'll send that over to you, have a little look at it. It's pretty famous, especially in UFO social media. Folks will talk about it. But it does touch on some of the things we've actually talked about, Paul, yeah, on this episode. What I want to do, Paul, I want to keep you just for 10 more minutes. I've got another couple of questions to follow up on, but I'm going to give those to the folks over on the Patreon, on the Apple Premium, on YouTube, people who pay for the podcast and support. There's some of the things that we talked about in the last interview. So not new, but they're asking for some updates on a few things or for you, yeah, to expand on something. So we'll finish up the interview here for everyone on the free feeds. And I'll say thank you very much, Paul. Firstly, how can folks find you and your work?
Anybody who wants to contact me with a report or wants to know more about what I'm doing, the website address is truthproof.uk. You get to me direct. If you want to email me, it's Paul Sinclair, it's all lowercase, three letters after that, ilf@gmail.com. Should we do the books?
Go for it.
The books are available on truthproof.uk. The DVD Wolflands is also available on truthproof.uk, but it's also on Amazon Prime. Yeah. And it's had some great reviews, just like the books. And the books will also be going back. They're available via Kindle download, but they'll also be going back on as paperbacks very shortly. The Amazon just made it difficult for me to literally make any money selling them, unless you went through Amazon, if you know what I mean. But that's another story. So, yeah, that's basically how to contact me and where to get hold of any information that you... And please, I'm more about listening to your reports and experiences, so that's what I like. So even if you don't even pay any interest in the books but want to share an experience, contact me, please.
Thanks very much, Paul. Always good to talk to you, and I'll keep you for 10 more minutes just to finish off with a couple of questions for those over on the paid feed. So if you support the podcast in that way, thank you very much. Otherwise, I will speak to you very, very soon. That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify, just search That UFO Podcast Premium. YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hey, I'm Dr. Z, and I'm a neurosurgeon. So that means long hours, early rounds, late nights, and everything in between. And through it all, I wear FIGS. Because they're built for what I do. Through the chaos, through the hours, and through whatever the day throws at me, they do their job so I can do mine. They're comfortable when it counts, and functional when I need them the most. So where do you wear your FIGS? on shift, on call, on the couch in the break room, listening to this podcast, wherever it is, they fit right in. And now listeners of this podcast can get 15% off their first order. Just head to wearfigs.com and use code FIGSRX at checkout. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX.